This is the Will Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 2nd of December 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 2nd of December, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And before we start on the main headlines, I will just apologise in advance. There is a buzzing noise coming from our computer fan, which unfortunately will pick up on the recording. So I apologise for the buzz that will run through. Now, the main headlines this week: road death anger. Two cars crash through walls in 24 hours. And power cut hits traders in the city. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is road death anger. Safety campaigners are stepping up their campaign after the death of a pedestrian at a notorious junction near Winchester. Jonathan Whitfield, aged 21, died in hospital last Thursday after a collision with a Ford Cougar at 5:30pm the previous evening on the A33 at Kingsworthy. In a hideous coincidence, the campaigners presented a petition on Thursday only hours later, signed by more than 400 people about the stretch where the collision happened. They say the 50-mile-an-hour speed limit is too high and should be cut to 40 miles an hour, and that recent changes to the layout of the Cart and Horses Junction have made things worse. Jill Prince and David Learmonth, presented the petition at the County Council meeting in Winchester. Miss Prince of Lynn's Way, Kingsworthy, said, "We knew there had been another accident, but when we presented the petition, we did not know he had died. I'm very upset." She added, "I'm very concerned. We tend to avoid the junction if we think it's going to be busy." As well as the difficult junction layout, the campaigners say the speed limit should be cut. Jackie Porter, County and City Councillor, said, "I'm devastated, absolutely devastated. We have been campaigning for a long time to get the speed limit reduced. There have been accidents in the last few months." Two members of the public presented the petition, so the council know it is not just me and other councillors making a fuss. One person described the junction very well. "It feels like the red arrows crossing over the junction, but they haven't had the training of the red arrows. The traffic is coming from different directions." Councillor Porter said there needed to be an independent review and a temporary reduction in the speed limit until the issue is sorted out. Mr. Whitfield from Cheriton near Alsford was taken to Southampton General Hospital but died from his injuries. His father, Terry Whitfield Stone, paid tribute. In a statement, he said, "Jonathan was a much-loved son who will be sadly missed by myself, Toby, his grandparents, his brothers, his sisters, his family and friends." The police closed a stretch of road from the junction with the B3047 near the Cart and Horses to the Winnell Interchange at the junction 9 of the M3. The driver, a 45-year-old man from Chandler's Ford, who has not been named, was uninjured. The police are appealing for witnesses. Juliet Howland of nearby Abbotsworthy has been in correspondence with the County Council for 2 years, pressing them to do something about the dangers. She said her family has used the junction since 1971 and told the Chronicle, "There has been complacency, ignorance as to what goes on at that junction. Most of the speeding traffic comes down from the north, and yet the only slowdown sign has been placed to the south. Time and money wasting, too much red tape. It's been a classic case of the people at the top not listening to the heartfelt concerns and pleas of the people on the ground." Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said in a statement, "I was very sorry to hear about this accident, and my thoughts are with the family and friends of the young man." And we have a few photographs, some of the actual crossroads, which is insane, with different cars in every direction. So I don't know how anyone deals with it. And a photograph of Jackie Porter, David Learmonth and Jill Prince and the mayor. And also a sign that is put up after these crashes asking for witnesses. The accident was on the 23rd of November at 5:28, in case anyone has heard anything.
It wasn't the early Christmas present that traders wanted after a power cut affected 18,000 properties and forced shops to close early. Winchester was without electricity from just before 3 p.m. on Saturday for around an hour. 1 minute shoppers were perusing items in the light and warmth, the next they were standing in the gloomy and cold High Street. Shoppers gathered by the light of their mobile phones as shops and pubs and cafes were unable to trade. The power cut cost traders thousands of pounds of lost business. Traffic lights were also out, while shops closed and sports fixtures were disrupted. A worker in one High Street clothes shop, who asked not to be identified, said people were still trying to shop with the torches on their mobile phones. We had to say, sorry, but could you please leave the shop? We lost a lot of business. The owner of an independent shop said everything went black. It was very annoying, as Saturday afternoon is our busiest time of the week. After working for an hour to reconnect the power, engineers found the cause of the problem. A pheasant. A spokesman for Southern and Scottish Electricity Network confirmed it would appear a pheasant flew into a high-voltage cable, causing the power cut. All 18,000 properties had power restored by 4 p.m. Winchester City FC were also forced to play the first half of their match against Dulwich Hamlet in semi-light before full power was restored in the second half. The power cut was not the only problem on Saturday. There were long delays getting into the city from late morning on Chesil Street and St Cross Road. County and City Councillor Jackie Porter tweeted, Winchester BID, please stop the street parking wardens. They're causing chaos, not just in Winchester, but Winnall too. On Monday, she tweeted to blame the new wardens. #WinchesterBID, please stop causing chaos by using street wardens to direct parking. Massive weekend congestion caused by cars stopping. Bad in capital letters. Chief Executive of Winchester BID, Catherine Turness, said, sadly, she has only seen one side of the story. Having spoken to the company that we have working on the job, they say that the public have been really complimentary of the service and they had a lot of people working on the weekend. It's always going to be a learning curve.
Two cars crashed through walls in 24 hours. Peter Marsh is the luckiest man in Hampshire. Normally, he would have been sitting at his desk by the window of his Winchester office. Last Wednesday, he was away when a car smashed through the window coming to rest where he usually sits and trapping the elderly driver. The Mercedes CLK 230 Coupe automatic crashed through metal railings and went over a 4-foot gap to embed itself into the building. No one inside was hurt. The accident brought the centre of Winchester to a standstill as police officers, fire crews and ambulances were called to the scene, blocking off Southgate Street next to Hotel Duvan. Mr Marsh of PMC Consultants told the Chronicle, I was lucky enough to be out of the office. I feel lucky and blessed. Later, he said, I took a call from Michael in our team whilst I was on the way back from a project in Borden at midday. He told me someone had driven into the office. I'd assumed he meant on the corner where our office is on the ground floor and had no idea he meant someone had almost flown their car over a basement gap right into our window. All of the blue light services were excellent and thanks to our business partners and landlord, we were up and running in the office next door the following morning. The driver was stuck in the vehicle for around 30 minutes before he was freed by firefighters and ambulance personnel. Aged in his 70s, he was shaken but otherwise uninjured and was checked over by paramedics. His wife told the Chronicle he would not want to discuss the incident. The 3-story building was evacuated to allow engineers to access its stability. Staff were later allowed back in. The police are investigating the cause of the incident, which happened at about 12:35 p.m. The driver is believed to have lost control shortly after emerging from the barrier-controlled hotel car park. The police spokesman said no arrests had been made and the priority was to make sure the building was safe. The road closure to allow the emergency vehicles to get close to the scene disrupted the journeys of hundreds of people, including hotel guests, who could not get out of the car park. Eyewitness Javier Ibarne was in the PMC office when the crash happened. "We could hear a car going very quick and heard a crash and saw the car hanging over the edge." Station manager Mark White, based at Winchester Fire Station, said, "We were called to a car that had been driven into a building, trapping one male occupant. When the car crews arrived, we had to stabilise the car as it was in a precarious position, bridging the gap between the pavement and the building. There were people within the building, but no reports of any injuries. No one was in the affected area. If there had been, it could have had very serious consequences." And the other accident is heading, "I heard a loud rev and saw the car go through the barrier. A car smashed into a Winchester gym, the second such incident in 24 hours and the third in 36. The latest incident happened at about 3:10 p.m. last Thursday when a Ford Fiesta leaving a car park careered into New Energy Fitness. Police, firefighters and paramedics rushed to the gym in Middlebrook Street. An elderly female driver escaped without injuries, and luckily there was nobody inside the gym on the machines closest to where the car went through the glass. Only 24 hours before, an elderly male driver had crashed his Mercedes automatic into an office at Southgate Street in Winchester, and the previous evening a car thumped into a house in Hedge End. A police officer at the gym said no one was hurt and there was no one inside the gym. It seems to have been driver error. She was leaving the car park and hit the accelerator rather than the brake and has gone into the building. Miraculously, no one has been hurt. The gym director is taking up the issue of safety with the city council, which operates the car park. It is the second crash at that spot in 4 months. Eyewitness Mark Christian, 49, a painter, decorator of Green Acres, was working about 30 yards away. He said, "I was up the ladder at the time. I heard a loud rev and then I saw the car go straight through the car park barrier. It sounded like someone had got their foot stuck on the pedal and it went straight through the glass. We rushed straight over to see if the driver was all right. She was an elderly lady and seemed to be more shaken than anything else. There was no one in that part of the gym at the time." Helen Mosley, director of the gym, said, "This is the second time in 4 months that cars passing through these barriers have hit the building. I do not want a third one. The first one hit the brick wall and the second the glass." Ms. Mosley said she would be contacting the city council to discuss safety. The gym reopened the following day with the hole boarded up. The elderly female driver of the car was checked over by paramedics. She was shaken but unhurt. And these articles are covered, are with photographs of the cars going into the buildings, and they're quite horrific.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices, then Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. And then we'll have announcements and what's on. So we'll start with the death announcements. Carr, Aileen Maeve Carr, who died peacefully on the 25th of November, aged 33. Carr, William John Carr died unexpectedly at home, aged 87. Collins, Patricia Pearl Collins, died on the 15th of November, aged 95. Doherty, William Doherty, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a short illness, aged 92. Edwards, Edna Phyllis Edwards, died on the 18th of November, aged 100. Hayes, Hilda John Hayes, died at Basingstoke Hospital, aged 90. Longman, Muriel Longman, No details of date or age. Lowe, Donald Lowe, who died on the 25th of November, aged 91. Miller, Alan Clive Miller, died at Cedar Lawn Nursing Home, aged 79. Page, Stephen Page, who died on the 19th of November. Penny, Mary Violet Penny, died on the 11th of November. Purvis, Tony Purvis, died peacefully on the 21st of November. And Smith, Roy Jackson Smith, who died peacefully on the 25th of November, aged 94. Now we move on to Christian comment, and that's read by Margaret.
And this is contributed this week by Mary Gray and is entitled A Peace Activist for Our Times. Will any of our readers recognise this name or wonder why we should remember her at all? Dorothy Day, 1897 to 1980, was an American journalist, social activist and Catholic convert. She became famous after her conversion to Catholicism, a conversion described in her autobiography, The Long Loneliness. Before becoming a Catholic, Dorothy Day lived a bohemian lifestyle, but her roots in social activism were very deep. She describes this social activism in this autobiography. In 1917, she was imprisoned as a member of suffragist Alice Paul's non-violent Silent Sentinels. In the 1930s, Dorothy Day worked closely with a fellow activist, Peter Moran, to establish the Catholic Worker Movement, a pacifist movement that combines direct aid for poor and homeless with non-violent direct action on their behalf, and remains a dynamic organisation today. She also practised civil disobedience, which led to additional arrests in 1955, 1957, and in 1973 at the age of 75 years. At the same time, Dorothy Day was also an active journalist and described her social activism in her writings. As part of the Catholic Worker Movement, Day co-founded the Catholic Worker newspaper in 1933 and served as its editor from 1933 until her death in 1980. In this newspaper, she advocated the Catholic economic theory of distributism, which she considered a third way between capitalism and socialism. Her activism and writing gave her a national reputation as a political radical, maybe the most famous radical in American Catholic Church history. The Catholic Worker Movement started when the first issue of the Catholic Worker appeared on May 1, 1933, priced at 1 cent, and has been published continuously since then. It was aimed at those suffering the most in the depths of the Great Depression, those who think there is no hope for the future, and announced to them that the Catholic Church has a social program and that there are men of God who are working not only for their spiritual but for their material welfare. It accepted no advertising and did not pay its staff. The publication of the first issue was supported in part by a dollar donation from Sister Peter Claver, for whom a Catholic worker house was later named. Dorothy Day's life is an inspiration for the Catholic Church. Pope Benedict XVI used her conversion story as an example of how to journey towards faith in a secularized environment. Pope Francis included her in a short list of exemplary Americans, together with Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., and Thomas Merton in his address before the United States Congress. The Church has opened the cause for Dorothy Day's possible canonization, which is accepted by the Holy See for investigation. Because of this, the Church refers to her with the title of Servant of God.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, I think you got the first one.
And this is from Phil Yates, Tower Street, headed Hall Makes Sense. Sir, I agree with Councillor Eileen Berry's remarks regarding the future of the River Park Leisure Centre when the proposed sports centre is up and running at Bar End, Chronicle November 24. It should not be demolished for housing, but converted into a concert hall, complete with a restaurant and an art gallery. It bears all the facilities with a car park already in place. This is better than building a new concert hall on the Silver Hill site, as suggested by Judith Martin in these columns a few weeks ago. I envisage a museum, up-to-date three-screen cinema, with a film museum, as in York, and landscape areas. No shop units, please. The concert hall would cater for large orchestras, ballet and opera companies. If this type of programme can be achieved at Northington Grange, this surely can be done in the city. City councillors should visit the concert hall at Poole Arts Centre for ideas. I have been associated with the Theatre Royal for 40 years, but the stage is not large enough to accommodate large orchestra and the auditorium seats 400, but if extended within the confines of the building, this would result in an increase of about 100 at most. Although the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra and others perform in the cathedral, this is not an ideal venue, not because it is a house of God, but for other reasons, poor acoustics and uncomfortable seating. So, in conclusion, I submit that the River Park Leisure Centre be converted and renamed the Saxon Concert Hall. There, I've given you it a name already. And that's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
This one is from AP Lodge, and it's headed Council Deaf. Sir, I've just had to pick myself up off the floor after reading Stephen Godfrey's letter on development, where he says the City Council, quote, starts with an open mind and listens, unquote. Chronicle, November the 24th. This couldn't possibly be the same council which has failed to listen to the people of Winchester these past 20 years, leading to the formation of Winchester Deserves Better and the Claire Lloyd-Jones report, could it? Just checking. AP Lodge, Takedown Meads, Winchester.
Viability question. A letter from Mike Rowe. Sir, Councillor Berry, Chronicle Letters, November the 24th, describes her vision for a major theatre and centre of the arts to replace the River Park Leisure Centre when it moves to Bar End. To be viable, this project would indeed have to attract a large audience which would need the sort of car park which the councillor envisages. Would she please share with us her solution to the problem of access and exit from this site? Mike Rowe, King's Close, Kingsworthy.
And this headed Heritage Failings from Mary Pearson. Sir, Stephen Godfrey's continuation of the City Council's vendetta against Councillor Kim Gottlieb in last week's Chronicle letters page, together with its criticism of columnist Joanna Lewis, made for depressing reading. I feel extremely grateful to both Councillor Gottlieb and Joanna Lewis for having made me aware of issues affecting our beautiful, historic city that the Council did not wish to be divulged. The massive support from local people for the Winchester Deserves Better campaign is a clear indication that Winchester residents care deeply about the preservation of the city's heritage. Sadly, it also indicates dissatisfaction with the council's stewardship of this heritage. Letters from David Selby and Peter Mitchell on page 52 of the paper are cheering. I fully support Peter Mitchell's suggestion that a well-designed new architectural development in Silver Hill should be named after Councillor Gottlieb. This would acknowledge Councillor Gottlieb's commitment to Winchester's unique heritage, a joy to those of us who live here now, and a thing of national and international significance. And that's from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Week.
This is from Malcolm Wright, and it's headed Referendum Act. Sir, I see the various people have been giving their opinion on the position on the European referendum and the vote to leave. I would like to point out that both the Referendum Act 1975, Chapter 33, to join, and European Union Referendum Act 2015, to leave, are the same, insofar as Parliament did or did not have to enact the result. However, in law, Parliament set a precedent by enacting the result of the first referendum, which the law courts cannot ignore, as this is the basis of our law system. To do so would most likely result in a constitutional crisis and end in a dissolved Parliament. New elections. This will be a disaster for all the mainstream parties in the current anti-establishment climate, and most likely to see a new government. Without many of the current MPs being elected, with a Trump-type leader. Guess who? Malcolm Wright, Goldfinch Way, south on Wanston.
From Karen Barrett, Price of Dreams. Sir, as a lover of the arts, I sympathise with Councillor Eileen Berry's yearning for a cultural centre at River Park, Chronicle Letters, November the 24th, but the thought of the City Council getting involved in another major project fills me with alarm. Dreams are all very well, but words are cheap, while the delivery, or even the non-delivery, of visions is incredibly expensive in the wrong hands. In the light of recent experience, I have reduced my wish list of local projects I hope to see achieved in my lifetime to two, namely a new bus station and refurbishment and useful future secured for the former registry building, Southwestern Pub. As for accommodating the low-paid and young people of Winchester, that will only happen with the election of a Labour government, totally committed to building truly affordable houses for rent, not endlessly amending planning legislation in favour of developers who are only interested in profits. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Forflood.
And this from Andy Smith, headed Value of the BID Bid. Sir, I do query the value of the Winchester Business Improvement District for the majority of Wintonians. It may benefit businesses and offer perceived kudos for the City Council. But there is a myth that an increase in business is a benefit for the rest of us. Having lived here for over 20 years, I have seen the effect on quality of life excuse me, and traffic of such things as proposed developments, a never-ending increase of street markets and festivals for the most trivial reasons. And now we have BID's Miss Cotterill complaining we are too protective of our heritage, Chronicle November 24. I should think so too. We do not protect for the sake of it, but because we care about our city for everyone, far more than any incomers trying to make their careers. Where else is she going to find an ancient capital of Wessex to brand another of her busy events with? Talking of non-events, I was intrigued to find BID's much-vaunted real-time parking information works on a laptop, but not on a phone, which most visitors will surely use. Any number of parking marshals is not going to find non-existing parking spaces in town. Perhaps instead they should hand out thermos flasks and blankets to visitors, while I enjoy my Christmas shopping in Rumsey and Salisbury. Andy Smith, Takedown Meads, Winchester.
There's that one. It's from David Farthing, and it's headed Pollution in the City. Sir, following publication of my letter on November the 17th concerning the need to appoint a consultant to prepare the desperately needed transport strategy announced by County Councillor Humby in September, I've been overwhelmed by the positive responses the letter has generated. This reaction has prompted me to review this subject in the columns of recent editions of the Chronicle, and I have found numerous letters expressing deep concern and frustration. Many correspondents complain of the Council's apparent inability to appreciate the urgent need for robust strategic plans for city development, in particular plans to address the chronic pollution and congestion problems. Only last week, 8 of the letters concerned transport matters, of particular note being the letter headed Money Wasted from Eric Horn, highlighting the appalling waste of money on the aborted Silver Hill and Station Approach schemes. Such waste is entirely due to these schemes having to be planned in a vacuum, inevitably creating lengthy and costly controversy. It is good news that at least the Central Regeneration Group is proceeding with the appointment of an urban design practice. But how can this practice proceed without a transport strategy with which to comply? Reviewing earlier editions, I found a good number of letters on the same subject, such as Traffic Spoils City, High Pollution, and Going Backwards, the last being an excellent letter from Kate McIntosh, MBERIBA, concluding with these fitting words. Meantime, Winchester marches with blind determination into the past, incapable of observing which way the wind of the future is blowing. Come on, Councillor Hamby, show us you are listening to this outpouring of public opinion and instruct your specialists to prepare a brief for the appointment of an experienced transport consultant. The cost will be tiny compared with the money being wasted on abortive development schemes. By making such an appointment, you would show us that you really are concerned that Winchester is one of the most polluted and congested cathedral cities in the country. David Farthing, Old Kennels Lane, Winchester. And it's accompanied by a picture of the offside rear wheel and underneath of a car showing an exhaust pipe larger than the usual run of exhaust pipes. And it's a worm's eye view, I suppose, of the pollution, because it is belching out nasty black polluted smoke. It's enough to make you cough just looking at the photograph.
From Sue Holbury, vacant city shops are an eyesore. Sir, whilst the Christmas lights in Winchester this year are delightful, I find it a great shame that nothing has ever been done to clean up the two vacant shops opposite the Guildhall. The condition of these shops is an absolute disgrace to the city, and I am ashamed to walk past them. They have been deteriorating for many years. One of the premises has a broken window, which was patched up with a pizza box many months ago. This temporary repair has now come unstuck, so the premises is not secure. What kind of impression does this squalor make on the many visitors who have to pass by from their coaches to get to the Christmas market and ice rink? I will not mention the condition of our bus station, as everyone knows what that is like. Sue Holbury, Imber Road, Winnall, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we dust off the old files, and Nikki, you're going to go step back a couple of hundred years.
Yes. December the 2nd, 1816. Slave trade banned. The question under the Act of Parliament for abolishing the slave trade, making traffic of Negroes a felony and subject to transportation, is about to be tried. Some little time ago, the master of a vessel named J.B. Hannay was taken into custody, charged with being feloniously concerned in buying and selling Negroes to make them slaves. He underwent an examination before the Lords of the Council when his mate and several of his sailors were examined against him, and it is reported that they proved his participation in carrying a number of Negroes from Calabar in Africa. The prisoner was in consequence committed in the evening to Newgate to take his trial for the offence. And the second item, Luddite threats. Nottingham is still subject to the lawless outrages and exactions of the Luddites. The collectors of the Black Committee continue to levy their contributions whilst the King's taxes and parochial rates remain unpaid. A collector of the poor rate in Nottingham, in lately going his round, was, it is said, answered by several housekeepers, "We are unable to settle with you. The other collectors have just been here, and you know we must pay them." Upon his remonstrating with them, the reply was, "Do you wish me to have my frames broken or my brains blown out?"
There's a couple of items from 100 years ago. December the 2nd, the very day, 1916. Zeppelins downed. A Zeppelin raid reported by Viscount French in a brief communique issued on Tuesday morning proved an enemy failure. Two Zeppelins were brought down in flames, one off the Durham coast and one off the Norfolk coast. The Royal Flying Corps were responsible for destroying one of the raiders, and the Royal Naval Air Service accounted for the second. The casualties were slight, considering that the enemy craft dropped over 100 bombs. There was one death, that of a woman from shock, and 16 persons were injured. And the other note is appeal for Jews. In our advertising columns, an appeal is made on behalf of the Russian-Polish Jews Relief Fund, which seeks to relieve in some measure the distress of 3 million of Russian-Polish Jews whose country has been devastated by the Germans and whose condition is wretched beyond description. At least £3 million per month is required to support them, and the above fund is the only national effort which is being made on their behalf. Contributions which are earnestly solicited may be sent to the Reverend Canon Braithwaite, 9 The Close, Winchester, or the Capital and Counties Bank Limited.
50 years ago, December the 3rd, 1966, grammars defended. A vigorous defence of the place occupied by grammar schools within the present organisation of secondary education was made by the headmaster at Eastleigh Barton Beverell Grammar School, Mr. R.E. Bowyer, M.A., presenting his report at the school's annual speech day on Friday in last week. Firstly, their role was to provide an intellectual education appropriate to the needs of able pupils. As a nation small in numbers, it was only by cultivation of the most gifted members of the community that they could hope to maintain their influence and keep abreast in an increasingly technological age. Mr. Bowyer pointed out that they drew pupils from widely different backgrounds. £15 a week demand. A united and determined call for £15 minimum wage for a 5-day, 40-hour week came from Saturday's annual conference at Winchester of Hampshire and Isle of Wight branches of the National Union of Agricultural Workers. The four branches who put forward resolutions to this end, Privet, Fordingbridge, Dummer and Efford, had found inspiration and support in the address to the conference from Lord Collison, the Union's General Secretary. He quoted a figure of £13, 16 shillings and one penny as the average earnings of a farm worker during the 1965-66 financial year, as compared with a £20, 5 shillings average for the industry.
And 25 years ago, on November the 29th, 1991, two items, shopkeepers' fears. Traders in the Square, Winchester, are worried that their businesses will be severely disrupted if a proposed resurfacing scheme is given the go-ahead by city councillors. On Monday, members of the City Council's Engineering Subcommittee will decide whether to approve a scheme to improve and enhance the Square with new bricks and paving. But traders and Winchester residents turned up in force to oppose the scheme at a public meeting on Tuesday. The owner of Brand's restaurant, David Bran, said that if the disruption was going to take place, he would prefer a pedestrianisation scheme, which would allow restaurants to place tables outside. And the second item, plan criticised. The Department of Transport has criticised Hampshire County Council's structure plan for being too restrictive in its policies for industry and commerce. In the structure plan, the County Council states, there will normally be no major new allocations of land for industrial development. The council claims that the provision of more land will attract new firms to Hampshire, which would exacerbate the pressures for more housing. The major policy is that 3,775,000 square metres will be provided for the construction of industrial, commercial and business floor space between January 1990 and March 2001. But the Hampshire Wildlife Trust believes the brakes should be applied to development in the county. Now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment, Nikki.
Which is headed, Council Asleep Over Junction Dangers. One of the ways that local democracy should work is that when people see a problem, they lobby their elected representatives, and if their concern has merit, something is done by the authority. Clearly, our front page news story this week suggests democracy has not worked very well. For years, people have been campaigning for a reduction in the speed limit near the Cart and Horses Junction at Kingsworthy. Last week, a pedestrian was killed in a collision. We do not yet know the exact circumstances, but people are right to feel aggrieved that this awful tragedy could have been avoided. A cynic might say the Conservative-controlled County Council may not have looked kindly on a campaign given energy by a Liberal Democrat councillor. However, MP Steve Bryan has also been vocal in his warnings. The junction is highly dangerous, unusually so in this increasingly safety-conscious age. There is a crossroads at the end of two very fast stretches of road. Any drivers over a certain age will remember many junctions like this back in the 60s and 70s. There is no doubt the County Council has been sleeping on watch. The limit was set to be cut from 40 miles an hour to 50 2 years ago, but nothing has been done. Inertia and complacency ruled. People have a right to know why that simple safety measure has not been introduced.
Thank you. Now, Graham, I think you've got first person.
I have indeed, yes. And it's called Power to the Peasants. Pheasants, rather. By Ron Ellison, yes. Right, perhaps that's a slip of the tongue. Anyway, apparently it was all the fault of a pheasant. There it was last Saturday afternoon, happily flying over Hampshire, when suddenly all went black. A high-voltage power cable intervened, and down below, over 18,000 properties in Winchester were plunged into, if not darkness, certainly unexpected dimness. All were affected: homes, shops, offices, businesses, traffic lights. Only when there were on-site generators was light to be found, and business more or less as usual could carry on. For myself, dozing at home, the power cut meant swapping Jeff Stirling on Sky Sports for the quaint old-fashioned delights of BBC Radio 5 and their superb team of sports commentators and reporters. Thank goodness for the battery-driven transistor radio that still serves us so well. I was almost disappointed when power was restored well before it was time for Sports Report. Not that listening to the radio was unusual for me. There seems to be one in every room at home, bedroom, bathroom, kitchen, living room, and all are essential if I'm to keep up with the Today programme on Radio 4 and therefore feel fully informed to face the day. It can be infuriating at times, I know, but it is an exceptional feat of broadcasting. 3 hours of live reporting, commenting, debating, and perhaps above all else, interviewing. Which brings me back to infuriating, and on to John Humphreys. Personally, I would not put the words together. John and I were colleagues at the BBC many years ago. I admired him then, and I do today. Yes, he can be aggressive, but I would say only when necessary. And in any case, being forceful or persistent is not being rude. If he gives a politician a hard time, then so much the better. And John knows the limits. It was suggested recently that he might be stepping down from Today. Well, I suppose he will one day, but it will be a great loss when he does. So back now to the pheasant cut and our hour of powerlessness. One effect on me during the 50 minutes or so was to realise just how much of our day-to-day living we take for granted. We arrive home, go in, press a switch, and a light comes on. Press another, and the light on the upstairs landing is activated. Into the bathroom, and the water we need is available. Perhaps the house is warm throughout, and so we're not shivering as we check the phone for messages or the computer for emails. And don't forget the fridge and what's in it, or the heat that is available when it comes to cooking. You could go on with examples every bit as well as I could, but there is another side of the coin. There are people, far too many, who for a variety of reasons, mostly not of their own choosing, live in a kind of dimness. It's not a collision between a bird and a cable that causes their misfortune. It is circumstances, a situation that perhaps they can do little about. It is then that responsibilities become ours. Not directly, maybe, but in our attitudes or our readiness to be practical, in our support of others. I'm sorry for getting a bit preachy here. It was not my intention. Simply that the power cut set me thinking how fortunate so many of us are while so many, even in Britain, are not. This is not a new situation, of course, but what have changed in my lifetime are the means by which the haves can help the have-nots worldwide.
Thank you, Margaret. Now I think we've got an alternative look at the news, Belgarum article.
Marvellous maps with Binky Bear. Binky Bear's latest adventures are set to put Oresford and Winchester on the map. Hampshire duo Maura Blackwell and Liz Nankivell, the creators of Binky Bear, the Hampshire Bear, have this week launched a set of three cute takeout activity maps, one for each of their read and explore books, which are set in Oresford, Winchester and central London. Co-creator Liz Nankivell said, Binky Bear books are local bestsellers, and with beautiful photographic illustrations and built-in maps, they are widely used at Key Stage 1 in local Hampshire schools to teach geography and map reading. Up until now, the only maps we had were in the books themselves or downloadable from our website. Now we have the maps to take away with you when you buy a book, makes the Binky Bear concept really come alive. So, if you spot families with an activity map wandering around Winchester or Oresford, they may well be connected to this, as there's a Binky Bear trail. It's useful that the trails always have a place to stop for refreshments, picnics, and also a chance to see local wildlife. And there's a picture of Binky Bear sitting on the table with his activity maps and with his creators, Maura Blackwell and Liz Nankivell.
Thank you. Now, before we do the announcements, just a quick reminder from the Hampshire County Council Adult Services Sensory Team that sensory services are available to those with a sight loss or dual loss. You're entitled to an assessment or reassessment of your needs. Just telephone them on 0300 555 1386. That's the Adult Services Sensory Team on 0300 555 1386. Now, a quick roundup of what's on, because we're approaching Christmas, so it's all Christmas-related. There's a chamber choir concert on Saturday the 10th of December in Winchester Cathedral between 1pm and 2pm. It's a free concert with a retiring collection. The following day, Sunday the 11th of December, Carols on the Green in the Cathedral Outer Close at 6pm. And also the same day in the afternoon, Sunday the 11th of December, there's an afternoon carol service in the cathedral at 3pm. Lighting up time ends Friday the 2nd of December at 7:48am and begins at 4:01pm. And next week on Wednesday the 7th of November, it ends at 7:55am and begins at 3:59pm. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's Winchester 870370. So now we continue with items of general news, Nikki.
And the first one headed, Crew Put Stop to Sewage Spill. A fire caused a pollution incident on the River Itchen near Winchester. Winchester firefighters prevented a major environmental incident by stopping raw sewage getting into the River Itchen on Monday night. But some foul water did seep into a watercourse of the river, said a Southern Water spokesman on Tuesday. The extent of the pollution was being assessed by Southern Water and the Environment Agency. An Environment Agency spokesman said, "Sewage has gone into the river. We have been taking samples, but there is no environmental impact we can detect." An electrical fire at the Garnier Road pumping station in St Cross at 7pm on Monday caused major pumps to fail, creating the risk of sewage getting into the river, one of the finest chalk streams of the country. Fire crews set up barriers that prevented a major ingress of foul water. Garnier Road, a main route across the south of the city, was closed overnight and reopened on Tuesday morning. Crew manager Dan Jocelyn of Winchester Fire Station said, "We dealt with the electrical fire in the pump house quite quickly. The only trouble was the main pumps for the sewage to fail. We had to call in our environmental protection teams and put dams up to stop overspilling. We managed to stop any spilling into the river and the road. Tankers were in place. We had to close Garnier Road to get tankers down the road. A Southern Water spokesman said protecting the environment is always a priority for us, but regrettably some flows which were filtered through screens did enter the river. We're working with the Environment Agency to assess the impact of this unforeseen emergency. There was a fire in a control panel at our pumping station in Garnier Road, Winchester, last night. While the pumps were out of action, we used tankers to manage the flows. The pumps are now up and running and the tankers will be stood down today. We'd like to thank the crew from Winchester Fire Station for its help. We'll be carrying out a full investigation.
I've got an article that says, it's headed, Seeing the City in Different Time. It's not just a historical thing, because there's been a book published called Lost England, 1870 to 1930, by Philip Davis. Now, normally, I would read the text and tell you about the photographs afterwards, but I thought I'd tell you about the photographs, which are taken from the book, so that you can, as it were, have those in your mind's eye when I read the rest of the text. The first one is a view of the Westgate in High Street in 1890, with horse and cart outside the shops and all that, before road schemes changed the area forever, as it says. The second one is the King's House in 1890, with some soldiers and so on standing about, and that was replaced by the Peninsula Barracks. And then there's a picture of the front of the book, and it looks as though it might be Chesil Street. It's something like that, little row of cottages and some people outside and a lady looking out of her front door. And obviously of that sort of early time. Then there's a picture of the front of the old Hampshire Chronicle offices, the High Street offices, in 1925. They're now, of course, at Zizzi's Restaurant, and the newspaper has relocated to number 5 Upper Brook Street, but still in the city centre. And there's a rather good shot of the names over the top, Jacob Johnson, stamp office, and two big bay windows and flags and buntings and all that, and a big banner notice right at the top of the building, Hampshire County Newspaper. Very splendid. And then there's King Alfred's statue around 1910 with half a dozen small children buzzing about. And the last one is the small one. It's the Butter Cross in 1906. And you can see the corner of Allen's, I think it's a sweet shop, and a couple of ladies in, obviously, you know, late in 19 Edwardian dress. So, having those in mind a bit, they are images from a lost time, and yet not so long ago. Although the clothing and transport seems to come from centuries lost, these images of a former Winchester are in fact from the city's near history. They've been collated into a new publication, Lost England, 1870 to 1930, featuring more than 1,300 stunning photographs from historic England archives, as well as private collections. The book explores how the country was transformed at the turn of the century, from sleepy villages and ancient market towns into an industrial powerhouse. From the Great Depression to the start of women's emancipation, the visual exploration showcases the changing face of Victorian and Edwardian England, and the sometimes called golden age of our country's history. Providing images from the length and breadth of the country, Lost England is a fascinating insight into an age now faded from memory. Some of the buildings captured still survive today. Many are lost forever. But it's often the people, their faces so familiar yet strange, who peer into the camera from a time we can no longer truly understand. In Hampshire, the images include snapshots of time for Winchester, Basingstoke, and several from Southampton. captured in time is the Buttercross, photographed in the High Street in 1906. The scene, apart from the store names, would be familiar to shoppers in the city centre today, although the fashions of the two ladies, chatting outside Tanner and Son, who were printers and newsagents, date the image to prior to the First World War. The Buttercross was actually sold to a Mr. Thomas Drummer in 1770, who planned to move it to his estate, but gave up in the face of local opposition. In front of the King Alfred statue, still today a prominent feature of the city, sits a row of children, their stockings and hats depicting a young style of the early years of the last century. I don't think they're actually sitting down. There's some of them on a sort of bench. The West Gate at the top of the High Street is pictured in 1890, when the main road still went straight through the medieval entrance to the city. The King's House shows soldiers and children chatting in the back parade ground of the barracks that existed on the spot that was once to have been a palace for Charles II. The building was demolished after a fire in 1894, and apartments now stand on the site that was formerly the city's castle. Still a familiar facade in the High Street is the former offices of the Hampshire Chronicle, pictured here in 1925. Today the building is a pizza restaurant and the Chronicle is related to Upper Brook Street. Lost England has been created by author Philip Davies, an international expert in heritage conservation, chartered town planner and historian. Lost England is published by Atlantic Publishing. Hardback copies, £45, at Atlantic, Atlantic Publishing, suddenly small letters, atlanticpublishing.co.uk. I suppose you could order it from the library.
Is £16 million value for money for homes? Councillors have voiced concerns at whether a new £16 million council housing scheme in Winchester is value for money. Winchester City Council is set to submit a planning application for the Valley in Stanmore. The scheme will consist of up to 76 new council homes. So far, the council has held consultations with residents about the plan. But councillors at a Cabinet Housing Committee last Wednesday, after the Chronicle went to press, expressed fears that the homes are not the right type for families in Winchester. The scheme consists of 31 bedroom flats, 28 two bedroom flats, 3 3 bedroom flats, 11 two bedroom houses, 2 3 bedroom houses, and 1 3 bedroom bungalow. City Councillor Ian Tate, who takes a keen interest in housing issues and was the only councillor to vote to support building on Barton Farm, said, "In terms of viability, we have got a cost of £16 million. That's £210,000 a dwelling. That's not including any land value. How robust is our system to determine that is value for money?" Housing manager Richard Botham explained the high cost of the scheme is due to the sloping nature of the site, hence its name. Mr. Botham also explained that people will often go for one or two bedroom properties as they are more affordable. Councillor Tate then expressed fears that the scheme is simply not the right one for Winchester. He said, "Family housing, that's what's been lost from Stanmore, and what we are building here is not family homes. This is not the housing people want. This housing is expensive. £16 million for 76 properties. Our build cost here is more expensive than the premium quality development in Sleepers Hill. This is not value for money." Councillor Eileen Berry said the scheme should have focused on bigger family homes. Welcoming the scheme for the area was Councillor Jamie Scott, who said there has been a loss of housing in Stanmore, with right to buy seeing homes going into private ownership and then on to landlords who convert them in homes in multiple occupation and let them to students and young professionals. Councillor Scott said the scheme will give the area a lift, but added that people are keeping a close eye on potential parking issues. The meeting heard how the rents will be 70% of market value. The City Council has a policy of building 300 council houses for people on the waiting list over 10 years. It is currently well ahead of target. Some 800 homes will be built at Barton's Farm, now called King's Barton.
Childline founder at concert. Dame Esther Ranson is visiting Winchester College Chapel next month to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the charity she founded. The chapel is hosting an evening of festive music and readings to mark 3 decades of Childline. Dame Esther is hosting the evening and will be joined by the young chamber choir, Sansara, and organist Malcolm Archer. The concert takes place December the 20th at 7:30 p.m. with a champagne and canapé reception to follow, for which tickets can be bought separately. Dame Esther, who has a house in the New Forest, said, "I'm looking forward to hosting this magical event in aid of Childline's 30th anniversary. It will be a great evening that will raise much-needed funds to keep Childline continuing for another 30 years. The event is being organised by the Winchester Committee of the NSPCC, the children's charity striving to end child abuse in the UK. Funded almost entirely by voluntary donations, it aims to help victims of child abuse to rebuild their lives. The charity's Childline service provides a safe, confidential place for youngsters with no one else to turn to 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Its free helpline also provides adults with a place they can get advice and support. Tickets for the concert are £30 and £25 for the champagne and canapé reception. For details, visit eventbrite.co.uk or email Alison Benton, Chairman of the NSPCC Winchester Committee, at alisonhbenton@btinternet.com. That's Alison H. Benton, all lowercase, at btinternet.com. And there's a really nice picture of Esther Ranson on a very sunny day, holding up a book by Dorothy Parker headed You Might As Well Live, and sunglasses on her head, beaming smile, hosting the event at Winchester College.
This small piece follows on to the one I was just reading, because it says a Winchester landmark is set to disappear in the coming weeks. And it is, as the photograph shows, North Walls Police Station. There is the entrance with the police sign up the, over the doorway and the big panelled wooden double doors firmly closed. The former North Walls Police Station is about to be swept away by the new owners, Southampton University. The university has bought the site, which lies next to Winchester School of Art. For the moment, it is being demolished and landscaped. A university spokesperson said, "The former police station site in Winchester is now owned by the University of Southampton and will become part of the Winchester School of Art campus. In the short term, the existing buildings will be demolished and the area landscaped to enhance the aspect from North Walls. Longer-term plans for the site are still under consideration by the university. The police moved out of the station, their base since the early 1960s, to relocate to the former County Council building, Mottisfont Court, on the High Street. Across the road, the Winchester Fire Station, vacated in 2012 for a new base on Eastern Lane, Whittle, was replaced by a number of upmarket homes."
Finger impaled. A teenager had his hand impaled by running along a fence in Winchester. The 13-year-old, who has not been named, suffered a painful lesson at Winchester train station on Saturday. A fire crew was called to help the teenager, who had become stuck on the fencing to the rear car park of the station at about 6:30 p.m. A spokesperson for Winchester Fire Station said, "We had a call last night for a removal of a person from a fence at Winchester train station. We cut the fence away and the teenager's family then took him to hospital because the piece of fence had impaled through his finger. The teenager had suffered the injury by running his hand through the fence, but apparently remained calm despite being in pain. The spokesman for Winchester Fire Station added, "It is very unlucky to have caught it that way. He was very calm and just very shocked."
MP calls for United Front to get best milk deal. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury is urging farmers to band together to get the best price from supermarkets. A cooperative-style initiative could provide vital leverage for negotiating terms and conditions with the likes of Tesco and Sainsbury's to get the best deal for milk production following the low price over the last few years. He urged farmers to think about the scheme when he met Agricultural Minister George Eustace and constituents Bruce Horne, John Lillywhite and David Handley from the Farmers for Action. Some farmers are selling milk for less than it takes them to produce it, forcing many into financial difficulties, although the price has risen recently. Mr. Hollingbury and the group discussed the power of the supermarkets and how farmers can make the best deal and secure better long-term prices for milk and other dairy products. These dairy producer organisations, DPOs, have been around for a few years. They have not been taken up in the numbers they should have been, even though they offer bargaining power with supermarkets, said Mr. Hollingbury.
Cinderella opens at Theatre Royal Winchester on Tuesday, with tickets selling even faster than last year's record-breaking pantomime. This year's traditional production features live ponies for the first time. The creative team is the same that brought Theatre Royal audiences last year's near sellout, Jack and the Beanstalk. James Barry is the writer and director, and there are songs and music by Simon Slater, who's been receiving rave reviews for his additional music to the National Theatre's production of Amadeus. Some of the cast are also returning, including Julian Eardley as one of the Ugly Sisters, Andy Medhurst as Buttons, Rosanna Miles as Baroness Hardup, and Winchester-born Bryn Lucas as Prince Charming. New to Winchester pantomimes are Bronte Tadman as Cinderella, Emily Strangham as the Fairy Godmother, and Nicole Bird as Dandini, reviving the panto tradition of a woman playing a man. And under the makeup and frock of the other Ugly Sister is Richard Gibson, who played Herr Flick in Allo Allo for 10 years. This year's run includes a signed performance, a touch tour, and two related performances which, for the first time, will be dementia-friendly. The sponsors of Cinderella are the Brooks Shopping, Sarah Barrett Hairdressers, and Hampshire Chronicle. Cinderella at Theatre Royal Winchester runs from December the 6th until January the 2nd. Several performances are sold out, but there are still tickets available from 01962 840 440. And there's a very jolly photograph of the Cinderella holding this quite large, too large for her, glass slipper, accompanied on either side by very, very strange, comical-looking Ugly Sisters. Splendid, jolly pre-Christmas photograph.
They are Ale and Hearty. Unity Brewery, a new brewery with a strong Belgian influence, is opening in Hampshire. Unity, which launches next month, will be Southampton's only commercial brewery. At present, Unity is a one-man band. Jimmy Hadley is not only the head brewer, he's also responsible for marketing, bottling and delivery. Jimmy, 33, worked at Camden Town Brewery and Earl's Brewery in Islington before returning to his hometown of Southampton in 2015. After a stint at the Red Cat Brewery in Winchester and Romsey's Flack Manor, he is now fulfilling an ambition to be his own boss. He started out in sales and marketing. "I was more interested in making than selling it. Now I do both. To start, Unity will produce about 1,600 pints per week, which will be on sale in local bars, restaurants and bottle shops, as well as the tap room at the brewery on the Belgrave Industrial Estate in Portswood. The beer will be Belgian and American influenced, and the core range will include a pale ale, a saison, and a table beer. There will also be special seasonal and one-off brews. Jimmy said he fell in love with Belgian beer on a trip to Europe with his father at the age of 19. The Saison beer is based on a Belgian farmhouse-style beer which agricultural workers would brew in the winter while there was little work in the fields, ready for drinking come harvest time. The table beer is based on the brew produced by Trappist monks to accompany food, which is traditionally not so strong as other beers in Belgium. We're proud to become one of the city's only breweries and to play our part in Southampton's booming craft beer scene, he said. He adds, we believe in the collaborative culture the beer industry is known for and will be working with other breweries, organisations and customers as part of our mission to not only make delicious, interesting beer, but also to have a good time doing. And there's a picture of Mr. Hatherley in with all his vats and he's taking the beer out of the vats.
Gottlieb by Silver Hill Site GP Surgery. Kim Gottlieb, the rebel councillor who derailed Silver Hill, has bought a GP surgery in the centre of the site for a seven-figure sum, the Chronicle can reveal. Councillor Gottlieb has purchased St Clement Surgery on Tanner Street, at the heart of the redevelopment area, and revealed he will pass ownership to a new civic trust set to be formed. The Silver Hill scheme, which collapsed earlier this year, is being reconsidered by the City Council. Councillor Gottlieb has secured a High Court victory which derailed the £150 million scheme. He confirmed the sale to the Chronicle in an email. The surgery has been on the market for some time, as have the Friars Gate surgery and other properties in the immediate vicinity. I simply took the opportunities that arose to help shape the future development of the site. Also, I have been able to make the practice's position secure until such time as the new surgery becomes available. I have not done this for any profit motive, and in due course, the purchase will be completed in the name of a new civic amenity trust. The public inquiry into the compulsory purchase orders in 2014 valued the site at around £1.8 million, but Councillor Gottlieb declined to reveal the price. The purchase ends a period of uncertainty and will allow St Clement's practice to relocate to the new building, which the City Council is set to build, on the car park on the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street. Councillor Gottlieb said others were interested in the Friars Gate practice, currently owned by THRE, the previous developer of Silver Hill. He said, I believe there are a number of substantial developers presently looking at it. I'm not bidding it for it myself. I am, of course, very interested in its future development, particularly because it is sited where the brooks need to be opened up and because as you drive through town, it would be the first thing you see of the whole site. Council leader Stephen Godfrey welcomed the sale. We were trying to help the owners resolve their problems. It was one of the issues surrounding the affordability of moving to the new premises we are building for them. It makes it easier for the St Clement's practice to move. This sale will bring the modern new building further forward. St Clement's currently has 17,000 registered patients. Councillor Godfrey said previously the City Council favoured a wholesale redevelopment of the area. However, in the past, parts had been on their own, such as King's Walk and the Iceland block in the 1970s. Councillor Godfrey added, I'm sure Councillor Gottlieb is doing this for the best of motives. We'll have to see how things pan out to see if this is a reality.
Blitz launched on drivers on phones, and there's a photograph of such a driver breaking the law with the phone numbers right here. Hampshire police have launched a crackdown on drivers who are putting lives at risk by using their mobile phone at the wheel. It follows the crash in which a mother and three children were killed when their car was crushed by a lorry driven by Hampshire trucker Tomas Klocker, who had been scrolling through music selections on his phone. Crocker, 30, of Andover, was travelling on the A34 in Berkshire in August when his vehicle smashed into stationary traffic at more than 50 miles an hour. Tracy Houghton, aged 45, died instantly along with her sons, Ethan, 13, Joshua, 11, and her partner's daughter, Amy Goldsmith, also 11. Jailing Crocker for 10 years, Judge Maura McGowan at Winchester Crown Court said his attention had been so poor He might as well have had his eyes closed. Police officers from the Hampshire and Thames Valley forces have launched a crackdown on drivers using their phones. Officers will stop drivers seen flouting the law and issue them with a fixed penalty notice, as well as educating motorists about the dangers of being distracted. It follows a previous campaign in May in which 190 people were caught, a 36% rise on the previous year. Police Sergeant Rob Hurd said drivers were four times more likely to be involved in a collision if they were using a mobile phone or were otherwise distracted. He added, unfortunately, far too many people are still deciding to take the risk, and the consequences of these actions can cause devastation, as we've recently seen with the case on the A34. The video showed the driver looking at his phone. Even though he looked up several times, he still did not see what was happening ahead, namely the slowing and stationary traffic. By the time he did realise it, it was too late, and four innocent people lost their lives. Sergeant Hurd added, the A34 crash was completely avoidable. People need to remember that a split-second lapse in concentration can result in an accident. My advice is to turn your phone off while driving, put it out of reach and out of view. That way you won't be tempted to look at it and become distracted. Experts say drivers are four times more likely to crash while using a mobile phone, which can slow reaction times by 50%. Motorists handed a fixed penalty notice have to pay a £100 fine and also have three penalty points added to their driving licence. Those taken to court can be disqualified from driving or fined up to £1,000. Drivers of buses or good vehicles could receive a maximum fine of £2,500. Send their cars to the crusher, that's what I mean.
The route for Jane is plain in the rain. It is something to look forward to in the rain. An initiative new trail to raise awareness of a programme of events across Hampshire to mark the 200th anniversary of the death of Jane Austen has been commissioned by Winchester City Council. The trail, the brainchild of AR Design Studio in Little Minster Street, is created in a special outdoor paint that will appear only during rainfall. It consists of 12 quotes from the author in 36 locations across the city centre. A living wall of ivy in the garden opposite the house in College Street where the author died will present an additional quote in the series. A new bench from which visitors can view the installation has been handcrafted by local sculptor Nicola Henshaw, following a workshop with pupils from Winnell Primary School. The trail, part of the council's Feet First campaign to encourage walking, is intended to build local interest in Austen's work, remind people that she lived and died in Hampshire, and support local businesses who have called for shoulder season campaigns that encourage footfall across the cityscape. The trail is the inaugural event for Jane Austen 200 and builds interest for Hampshire Cultural Trust's exhibition in the Gallery of Winchester Discovery Centre from May the 13th to July the 24th next year. See www.janeaustin200.co.uk for more details about the year-long programme. And there is a picture of three young ladies sitting under umbrellas. Obviously, it's raining because the quotes have appeared on the pavement.
New carol striking a chord with choirs. A new Christmas carol, written by Rumsey's Choral Society's musical director to raise money for Macmillan Cancer Support, has gone viral before Christmas. The conductor, composer and professional singer, Jamie W. Hall, offered his carol free of charge to any choir willing to raise funds for his chosen charity, little suspecting how popular it would become. Using only the power of social media to promote his venture, he has been stunned by the number of choirs lining up to sing his work. Jamie said, "When I set out, I thought I'd be able to find a few choirs who would take this on and maybe raise a few hundred pounds. Now there are over 80 performances lined up across the country and even as far away as Malta, Geneva, Australia, New Zealand and the United States. I'm absolutely stunned and really hope it raises a lot of money for this fantastic charity. He wrote the piece upon hearing that a much-loved member of Romsey's Choral Society's tenor section had died after a short battle with pancreatic cancer. I wanted to write something just about any choir could sing, something uplifting at a very sad time. Once I had the piece, I wondered if I could use it to help others suffering with cancer. I never expected the level of attention and support it has received. Jamie attributes the success of his campaign to a recording of the piece made by the professional singing group, the Queen Six, which has received many thousands of online views and has captured the imagination of choirs everywhere. He added, even though the carol will be sung across the country from December the 3rd all the way to Christmas Day, it means more than anything to me that the Romsey Choral Society themselves will sing the carol, Sleep My Jesu, in a concert at 7 p.m. on December the 18th at Romsey Methodist Church. There will be lovely music, Christmas readings and plenty of rousing carols for everyone to sing, the perfect way to remember our friend and support the work of a wonderful charity too.
Pupils compete to develop Sexting Dangers campaign. Hampshire Secondary Schools fought it out to help launch a police campaign for safer online messaging. Six schools, including Test Valley School, Applemore Community College and Woodlands Community College, attended the final at Victoria House in Hamble. It comes after 80 initial expressions of interest from schools earlier in the year. The Safe For Me Sexting Prevention campaign began in June, inviting secondary schools from across the county to submit ideas for a public campaign that can communicate and educate on safe messaging behaviour. It follows a survey of 900 Hampshire students which found 13% did not think it was illegal for those under 18 to take, send or share images of a sexual nature. Hampshire Constabulary School and Youth Engagement Coordinator Maria Carrick, who helped launch the event, said, "Education in schools and colleges is crucial for young people to make informed, positive choices to avoid themselves and their peers becoming involved in such behaviour." The six schools presented their campaigns with the hope of it becoming the new police campaign for the public. Presentations including videos, speeches and questions from the five judges. The winner was chosen by a panel of judges from the NSPCC, the National Crime Agency's Child Exploitation and Online Protection Command, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Youth Commission, part of the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire. The winners were students from Robert May's School in Odeham for their animated concept that warned of nude and sexual pictures spreading once shared. One of the judges, Deputy Chief Constable Sarah Glenn, said, "We thought all the entries were phenomenal. It was a very difficult judgment call. Robert May's school now has the opportunity to work with Hampshire Constabulary to produce a campaign that delivers key messages to young people about the implications of sexting. Applemore Technology College and Woodlands Community College were named runners-up. Meanwhile, Test Valley School in Stockbridge was praised by the judges for their concept.
A relief for rural businesses. They may still have dial-up broadband and poor transport links, but there was some good news for rural businesses from the Chancellor. He announced that rural rate relief, RRR, will double to 100%. Under the current arrangement, the only shop or post office in a village of fewer than 3,000 people and a rateable value of less than £8,500 receives 50% RRR, as do the only pub or petrol station with a rateable value up to £12,500. Councils have the option of increasing the relief to 100, and many already do. Under this change, every qualifying premises will automatically receive a 100% discount on their rate bill. In reaction to the announcement, CLA South East Regional Director Robin Edwards says, "Rural rate relief changes are sensible and end unfairness and complication for the small amount of businesses that benefit. However, they will do little to allay the major disruption faced by rural business owners who have seen big increases in their rate bill as a result of the 2017 rates revaluation. We will continue to press for action to ensure rates bills do not act as a barrier to investment by rural businesses."
Befriender training. Winchester residents are being invited to sign up for a training course to befriend a local child. Friends of the Family is running a next befriender training session in February 2017 and is encouraging men and women aged over 23 who can spare 2 hours a week to befriend a child to register their interest now. The two-day course takes place in Winchester and covers all aspects of the befriending role, including confidentiality, safeguarding, and communication skills. It seeks to equip volunteers with the tools necessary to offer positive support to a child. A Friends of the Family spokesman said, "Following successful completion of the training course, the befriender will be carefully matched to a child who is aged between 5 and 13 and in need of someone to provide regular, sustained support. Befrienders visit the child once a week for a period of 12 months. During the two-hour visits, which usually take place after school, befrienders spend quality time with the child and undertake enjoyable activities both inside and outside the family home. Email volunteers, the email address is volunteer@fotfwinchester.org. Probably easier, call Lisa Travers, volunteer recruitment coordinator, on 01962 864 466. That's 864 466.
It's quite a nice change to have something favourable and useful about libraries. Thousands are set to get a helping hand thanks to free or discounted courses at libraries across Hampshire. Hampshire Futures has given the Library Service £300,000 to support 3,500 people as part of a wider £1.35 million. Courses include yoga, meditation, painting, dance and wiggle, and Spanish for beginners, and are available at Winchester, Chandler's Ford, Fareham, Farnborough, Gosport, Waterlooville, and Aldershot libraries. There will, of course, be courses to target groups to improve their English, maths, digital, and employability skills. Getting people back into employment is also a key aim, and some courses will offer CV writing, interview skills, money management, and confidence building for those on employment benefits and aged 19 or over. The courses will be available in libraries in Eastleigh, Gosport, Hythe, Livington, Havant, Waterlooville, Petersfield, Farnborough, Fleet and Aldershot. There will also be family learning courses, which include English, maths, digital courses and lip reading, as well as friendship groups. These target people who receive income support or universal credit, and or have a learning difficulty and or disability, and they're free to eligible learners. They are available at Aldershot, Basingstoke, Bridge Mary, Eastleigh, Fareham, Farnborough, Fleet, Gosport, Hythe and New Milton.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks, of course, to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And, of course, a special thanks and a goodbye from Graham, for whom this is his last recording. How many years, Graham?
25 from
right,
the beginning.
Right from the start.
From the start.
Thank you to Graham, from all of you and from all of us. for giving us such support over the years, and I'm sure we wish Graham well.
Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, Graham, and from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. Do have an enjoyable week. And when you're finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.